Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
This is Turn the Page podcast, and again, this is Jessica
and Stacey,
and we're here with author of Lock Every Door and Final Girls and
The Last Time I Lied,
Riley Sager. How are you doing?
Hey there. How are you?
Very well.
Good.
And we have to say, Stacey and I are huge, huge fans of your books.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice to hear.
We're also both horror fans, so it helps.
Oh, definitely helps.
I mean, indeed. You know, not that it's I just remember when your first book, The Final Girls, came out. I was so excited, and I ran with it up to Stacey's desk, and I'm like, Stacey,
awesome.
We need to read this.
And I said yes, except you were the one who read it because I was reading other books for work. Although I did read Last Time I Lied,
which was awesome.
And compare, like, of your earlier work. I didn't realize, though, like, that you had the horror theme going throughout until I was, like, looking into your latest one of Lock Every Door. I was like, oh,
it's, yeah, it's very cool. So your three books, it's like they, you kind of weave together three different horror tropes.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It's fun to take these tropes and sort of twist them to give people kind of not what they're expecting, but kind of what they want, but don't even know it.
Oh,
if that
yeah.
makes any sense.
No, it does, because we loved it.
Nail on the head right there.
So this latest one was, it was more, Lock Every Door is more atmospheric. It has the feel and the pacing of Rosemary's Baby. And it's also set in a fictional, iconic, landmark apartment building in New York. What made you decide to go from, I guess, a slasher to camp mystery to to I don't know, what would be the what would you consider the is it a theme of this one?
I was like, this is my version of Rosemary's Baby. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I set out to do. And, you know, not to replicate that amazing book, but to just sort of take the idea of this young woman going into this glamorous apartment building and meeting these neighbors who may or may not be trustworthy and encountering very sinister goings on. You know, that was my goal.
You were successful.
It was very good. And I think one of the things that Stacey and I were discussing about the book was that Jules is a very different narrator than Quincy and Emma had been for Final Girls and Last Time I Lied. She's the most
reliable
of all the three.
Definitely. Yes. I because of Final Girls and Last Time I Lied, they weren't the same book at all, but they had similar things going on. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to avoid all of those with Lock Every Door. So I sort of set these ground rules for myself. One was no cabin in the woods.
Which is a great movie, by the way.
it really is. It totally is. But just, you know, just get out of the woods for a book.
Yes. Okay. Oh, yeah, that's true. I think last time. That's true. I didn't even make that connection until just now. But OK, so we're out of the woods and we're into the city.
Yeah. No unreliable narrator. Jules is 100% reliable.
She's so innocent. Like, she's like, it's heartening and it's almost refreshing, you know, to like, she really just bears her heart and it's so well done.
Well, thank you for one thing. I knew that because this book enters some very, I've heard it described as deliciously bonkers.
Ooh.
And I love that description, and I'm all on board with that description. So the things, some of the things that happen in this book are way out there. And so I knew I needed a character that was very grounded and very down to earth, and that readers could really see themselves in Jules, because then the choices she makes throughout the book would really make sense. And also that they'd be rooting for her the entire time.
Oh, absolutely. I think even, you know, when I was reading Final Girls, there were, you know, I mean, obviously, I didn't want Quincy to die, but there were parts where I'm like, what? Like, what are you exactly? Like, what? Like, is she really, like, you know, is she like, it was difficult to see myself, I guess, in her because of all the other things that had been going on that you find out throughout the book. And it was just so good. And just this was more of a slow burn, Stacey and I were discussing.
Yeah, because I was reading all the different reviews on Goodreads and I was like, oh, like, let's go through like what people think. I like looking at all the different stars to see what people like or hate. I was like, first of all, you have like 5 million five stars reviews on this book,
which is
so congrats,
which is well deserved because I tore through it.
But some of the people said like it was a slow burn to kind of start. And I was asking Jessica because I had never watched Rosemary's Baby or read the book, and I was just like, is it like that? Because like I just know Rosemary's Baby being creepy, satanic, and Antichrist and Mia Farrow. That's like all I know about that. And she's like, no, it's kind of like that. So I was like, oh, okay.
So how did you, oh no, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, both are very slow burns, and it was intentional on my part to really get you inside this building and get a sense of what it's like and what menace might be lurking inside, mm-hmm. and to meet the neighbors. And so there was a lot of world building and ground setting that I had to do in order for the final third of the book to really pay off. And as a writer, you're always worried about, oh gosh, are readers going to be patient enough to get through this? Like, it's important. I know it's important, but will they know it's important? And so it's a tricky balance to keep them reading, yet also set the groundwork for what comes later.
Yeah. But I think you do that really well, not in this one, but in Last Time I Lied, like just the building of everything, you're very like detailed, and I just like, I feel like I'm there, and I'm like, oh wow.
And a side note, you know, about that one, Stacey and I then spent like tons of time reading about drowned towns.
Yes.
Because that was just like a little aside that was so fascinating to us. And then of course we find out that this is a thing that's happened, and I think our state, I think New York is like number
one. Yeah,
New
York has like a lot
up in the Catskills. So that's it was interesting. But with this one, I loved like the cast of weird, quirky characters that came in and out of the Bartholomew. Did you draw them from anybody specific, or just imagine? No, you know, like who would live in that area of New York?
It was really, yeah, who would live in this? I've been saying this, and I hope no one who lives there ever hears this or reads the book, but it's totally based on the Dakota. I
mean, of course.
I make no, you know, attempt to disguise that fact. But I often wonder, like, other than the super famous people who live there, like, who else lives in the Dakota? And what are their lives like? Clearly they have money. And so I just imagined like this building full of wealthy yet eccentric people. And it was really fun to come up with some of them, like the former soap opera actress.
I loved her with her little dog.
who always carries the little dog around with her. And it was just fun dressing them both. Like, cause she dresses up the dog and she wears these very dramatic, almost Norma Desmond like things sometimes. Like, I think at one point, I do put her in a turban, I believe.
Yes, I remember that.
And I don't think there was any outfit where it's like, oh, no, that's too much. No, I think I went like, because I think she's in like riding crops in another scene or something.
But it works.
It was very fun.
It so works. And then, of course, there's the author of the book that was set in the Bartholomew, Heart of a Dreamer, which was so central with Jules's relationship with her missing sister. And that was an interesting relationship that you built between the two of them. What made you decide to make that connection? Because at first, she wanted nothing, you know, Jules is like, this is my favorite book. And she's like, well, if that's your favorite book, you need to read more, which is just so heartbreaking. You know, they say never meet your idols, but it was just so heartbreaking at the moment. But that was an interesting relationship that you built with the two of them.
Well, with the book that's within the book, Heart of a Dreamer.
Yes.
I wanted to give Jules as many connections to this building as possible, because that would sort of justify why, oh gosh, yes, I want to live here, because it was the location of mm-hmm. my favorite book as a child. And it's the book my sister read to me, and my sister is now gone and I miss her so much. And so it was really, you know, giving another reason for Jules to live there. And when she finds out that the author of this book, Greta Manville, also lives there, of course she's going to approach her. And at first,
which is against the rules.
Yeah.
It is totally against the rules that she's supposed to follow. But again, it's like, this is a good reason for her to break that rule.
Sure.
You know, if I was told, like, okay, don't talk to Stephen King, yeah. King. But and suddenly Stephen King is there in like a hotel lobby, I'm like, I'm gonna talk to Stephen King.
Yeah, I think it's very realistic to do that, to break some of the rules, because I was reading like a article where you were saying, like, you know, she has all this stuff, and yes, it could be red flags for people, and even though she's very reliable, like, she is in a situation, like, you know, she's homeless, she doesn't have her family, she's broken up with her boyfriend, and she goes for this, and with that connection with the book, like, you're gonna break some of the rules, like, it's human nature. So I thought that was interesting.
Absolutely.
And so with Greta Manville, when I first started writing her, I made her very sweet and grandmotherly, and it wasn't working at all.
Like, I'm so glad that didn't stick.
As I was writing her dialogue, I'm like, this sucks. This totally sucks. And so I'm like, I'm just kind of going to make her a bitch.
It worked.
Like, just really make her. Yeah. And that was great to see the relationship, like this sort of almost antagonistic mm-hmm. at first relationship, but then they become, like, you know, she becomes one of Jules' closest friends in the building.
I liked that, and I really thought that it did feel very real. And I think that, you know, obviously I don't want to spoil anything, but mm-hmm. you know, with just the way the progression of the story, I think that if she'd stayed that, I think it would have just been a very different impact.
I think so too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, really, you know, I have to say, Stacey and I were also discussing the ending again, which I don't want to spoil, but I thought it was a very refreshing twist, because you really think it's going in one direction.
And then it's like, well, that was me trying to snap and failing.
Yes.
It's just like, because I like that, because I mean, like, I'm sometimes good at, like, being like, oh yeah, this is what's going to happen, and like calling it out to myself. But I like that I was like, oh, this is, I did not see this happening.
But it made sense. Like, sometimes when authors or directors are trying to come up with a twist, and I'm not going to name anything because I don't want to get on anybody's bad side, but I'll say, oh God, that twist came out of, it didn't even come out of left field. It came out of the dugout. You're just like, wait, what?
Yeah.
But this one didn't. It all, like, when you look at just the nuances, it all made sense. And you're just like, okay.
Like, that reminds me, though, because of, like, the title, Lock Every Door, like the locked room trope. That you have, like, you know, you get the pieces of the puzzle and then everything comes together, big picture, full circle. And I liked that.
And I was very, very worried about the big twist, because I, you know, because these types of books, they sort of live or die on how successful the big reveal and the big twist is. And when I first had this idea, like, oh, this is what's going on in this creepy building, my first thought was, oh my gosh, this could be brilliant. And then immediately my second thought was, oh my gosh, this could totally end my writing career.
No, I think you because, did very well.
Because it's just, it's that out there. And so I needed to really ground it all in a sense of reality in order for it to really work. And so far, knock on wood, I think it succeeded. So.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I really liked it. And it's almost, and you know, you have all of those things. I liked all of the things that you dropped about the building. You know, Jules's friend says, oh, there's a curse. And Stacy particularly likes that you referenced American Horror Story.
Yeah, even though I'm behind on that TV show.
You know, like you have like these buildings like the Dakota and the Hotel Cecil, is it?
In
California, which have all of these.
Oh, just, like the many deaths?
Yeah, that, you know, just strange history connected to it. And it worked very well, you know, what you got about the Bartholomew. But, you know, people still live there. People still go there. And like, sometimes you're just like you were saying, like, yeah, people live in the Dakota, even though it's infamous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's beautiful and it's got a beautiful view of Central Park, and you know, but people will still pursue it. And the question as to why people pursued the Bartholomew and why, you know, like there were vacant places, but certain wealthy people still weren't getting apartments there. It was just really good. Yeah.
It was really fun coming up with that building because, yeah, it was the Dakota, but I wanted to make it its own thing. And so I sort of had to build this elegant yet sinister apartment building from the ground up. And it was just so much fun to be like, I'm going to put gargoyles everywhere, including right outside Jules's bedroom window.
Yes.
And she's going to like talk to it and it's going to become a character. And you know, just the creepy wallpaper and the dumbwaiter. It just was, I want to fill this building with as many like creepy touchstones as possible.
I loved the wallpaper. The wallpaper was like a character in itself.
And to give credit where credit's due, that was inspired by the Haunted Mansion at Disney World.
Was it really? I was going to ask if it was inspired by the yellow wallpaper, but that props to that.
No, because I was just like, no, all the stuff of the creepy touchstones. I was like, what, like from what movies or like actual historic places or, you know, attractions or something like made you want to add that into the building?
And as a really quickly, a personal aside, just because it's hilarious. My 4-year-old son, who the Haunted Mansion like is his favorite place in the world. And he tells me he has good dreams that we went back there and it was scary and he loved it. He asked me when I was reading your book, he asked me what book I was reading. And I said, it's called Lock Every Door. And he ran around the house going, lock every door. Dun, dun, dun.
It's hysterical. She took a video.
Your son
hysterical.
Is awesome.
He's really great. And his twin brother is actually more timid than him, but he's really awesome.
He's fun.
So getting back to it. So you were inspired by the Haunted Mansion for the wallpaper.
Yeah, because there's this wallpaper inside that it's purple and black, and it looks like sort of abstract. And then you look closer, I'm like, oh, those are faces.
Yes,
yeah.
they're very cartoonish faces. But so I knew that wallpaper had to be inside the Bartholomew. And as a side note, like the cover of Lock Every Door is just so gorgeous.
It is.
Like,
the purple and the pink.
I love
And I have a mug that I bought at Disney World with the Haunted Mansion wallpaper on it. And I was drinking it the other day and I looked at the cover and I held them up. I'm like, they match.
That's
awesome.
No, because we.
So I had to post on Instagram. It's like that feeling when your book cover matches your Haunted Mansion mug. And there it was.
So I know that like we're kind of getting closer to the end of the interview, but you're so what are you working on next? Because if it's what I think it is, it's something very close to our heart here.
I was
going
to say like close to home.
Close to home. I shouldn't say our heart, but close to home here on Long Island.
It's very close to home. Yeah. My inspiration for my next book is The Amityville Horror. Ooh. And it's right now, this could change, but right now I have it taking place in Vermont just to sort of remove, you know, like, and it's going to be a lot different than what you expect when you hear the words Amityville Horror. But that is sort of like the jumping off point for what I have planned.
That's excellent.
Yeah. I just want to call you like the James Wan of publishing, because like your books all like take something of horror, and even though you're not doing like the whole Ed and Lorraine Warren, all that like mystical stuff that his movies are, that like I'm obsessed with currently, but you pull from horror, which I think is really cool. And each book that you've had pulls like from a different place, which I think is cool. And your next one I'm excited about.
So go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, well, I was going to say it's fun as a writer to sort of straddle these genres. Like I like to sort of be on that thin line between psychological thriller and horror, and to keep the readers never quite knowing what side I'm going to lean into more than the other. And I think it's fun for them, and it's certainly fun for me.
Oh, that's awesome. It's certainly fun for me.
Yeah. Well, I like it because that you toe that line rather well. But I think it works that they're marketed that they have horror aspects, because a lot of people go like, oh, it's a horror book. Like, no, thanks. And it's a shame because a lot of them are really good. Like you said something, I didn't write it down, but you said something in an interview how like it touches upon like moral aspects in society, like horror approaches all this. And I have like what you said in a Word document, because I was talking about horror at a pop culture panel. But I was just like, no, like it's true. Like it really delves in and talks about things that not a lot of other books necessarily will. So I like that you do that. Thank you.
Oh, no, thank you. And it's that's why the horror genre is really... It's great for many reasons. One, because it's so fun to be scared. Mm-hmm. Two, it offers, you know, horror really has been dominated by women characters since for decades. And so, like, it's great to sort of continue that with these kick-ass female protagonists. But also, you can address, like, issues in horror that I don't think you'd be able to get away with in a literary novel, because it would be too preachy and maybe too on the nose. But with horror, you can sort of sneak in your message while at the same time scaring the pants off of people.
Definitely. Yeah. I think so. I've actually... I was the biggest wimp on the face of the planet until I took my film theory class in college, because that was actually my major, film theory. And what better way to study film is, you know, film theory than through horror. So it was all horror. And I went from being like terrified of looking at the Haunted Mansion to being like, okay, we're going to watch the Scream trilogy and then we're going to go to sleep. And my roommates being like, oh, could we all like camp out in the living room? I'm a little scared. And I'm like, nah, I'm good. You guys have fun.
So, wait, really?
Yes, I'm dead serious.
No, because I used to be terrified of the Haunted Mansion too, because the lightning and whatnot, their effects are amazing. But it's actually Stephen King. I started watching the miniseries of It when I was younger, and I was just like, oh my God. I mean, it's probably because Tim Curry, like, I couldn't find him scary in that situation. Even though Pennywise is terrifying in other aspects, but I just like, oh, I love this. And then I got into horror for a whole bunch of other stuff. I love freaking myself out, though.
May we ask before we wrap up how you got into horror?
It was Scream, actually.
Excellent choice.
I was a film theory major in college.
Yes!
As well.
Where did you go?
But it prepares you for nothing. But at that's the time, true. It was great. He's like, I'm watching movies and writing papers, and this is what I'm studying. And Scream came out, and for some, I wasn't a horror fan then, but I just really wanted to see it for some reason. And it was so fun. Yeah. It was scary and funny and so smart.
Yes.
And so after that, I just like sought out lots of horror movies. And so I'm still a big fan to this day.
Oh, very awesome. Nice. Very cool. That's so funny that you were also a Phil. And of course, you know, that's what called me. Like when I saw that there was a book coming out called Final Girls, I'm like, Final Girls, somebody gets it. Somebody knows, that the term for, you know, the survivor of a slasher flick is a final girl. Yep. And, that's just so cool. And, we once again, Stacey and I,
yeah, we're just so happy to talk to you as fans of your work and to know more about.
And as librarians, and we're always recommending your books. And it's clear, just speaking to you, how much you love what you do.
Yeah.
It really is. I have a really sweet job. I'm not going to lie. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I just have to say, I pulled up on the Instagram that photo you were talking about. The book mug is like spot on. It matches very nicely. It's very pretty.
Do you
it's just a happy coincidence.
Do you have like a horror film that's maybe not so well known that you'd recommend to people, like a favorite?
Oh, I'm so behind right now.
So am I.
I've been so busy that like I haven't been able to see Us.
It's fantastic.
Midsommar is coming out very soon, and I'm like, I don't even know when I'm gonna get to see Midsommar. So I really don't at the moment. I can't think of anything. I know the last one that utterly terrified me was It Follows.
Ooh.
Yes.
That was good.
Well,
that one I just was looking over my shoulder like for days afterwards, like, is someone following me? so it did its job.
Yeah.
Funny story, when I was in college and I started watching more horror and reading more horror, it wasn't even that great a movie, but I remember I watched Urban Legend and then I walked home to my apartment alone and somebody was behind me. And I guess it was just somebody else walking home alone, but I turn around and I screamed at her and she's like, oh my God, what happened? Really? And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I just watched this really cheesy horror movie.
I don't have something like that, but I watched the movie Stay Alive about a video game. And if you die in the game, you die in real life. And I was terrified to play video games for like the next week. But it's like, what's going to come and get me? Mario or Luigi? Mario's coming to get me. So like, I was like, all right, I need to not be afraid. I'm going to do this. Whatever. If I die in the game, I'll die fun. And it'll be an interesting death. So it's a fun story.
Well,
we'll talk about it for years.
Yeah.
Thank you again. And we're going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.